So at this time, I would like to move to item 11. And so, Mr. Robertson, if you can introduce that item.
Thank you, Chairman Wolf. So, as a precursor to this item, and I should have said this as we got into item 10, item 10, 11, and 12 kind of create a theme of environmental justice and replacement safe drinking water. And this is something I'm experimenting with a little bit, is a little bit more focused theme-based meetings that concentrate ideas across more than just one topic. So specifically with item 11 is an informational item to provide an opportunity for the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, as we refer to them as EJCW as shorthand, to report out on the status of the integrated plan to address drinking water and wastewater needs of disadvantaged communities in the Salinas Valley and Greater Monterey County. EJCW plays a key role in providing a local on-the-ground presence for outreach to disadvantaged communities on the Central Coast, and we've talked about that in abundance here. Moises Moreno Rivera, EJCW Central Coast Program Coordinator, is here today to present an update on the integrated plan for Salinas Valley, disadvantaged communities, and their efforts to support affordable and sustainable safe drinking water solutions for the Central Coast.
Now, I have a question. I have four speaker cards, and I'm not sure if all of you are, it's a package presentation?
Yeah, yes. So the way we have the project team here, and we have broken down the presentation. I know we've been allotted a minimum of 15 minutes to present. We have a minimum of 15 minutes to present, and all the people who are here present today have a different component to share with you.
Okay, perfect.
You actually have 25 minutes to present. That's what was requested. I don't want you to have to.
Okay.
We thought this.
Yeah, okay.
This issue was substantive enough that we re-agendized it to this meeting from public comment, I guess, last meeting. And right. So you have 25 minutes.
Great. No need to even better. Thank you.
So you have 10 more minutes, which allows you to speak slowly.
Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Horacio Mesquita. Board members, I also appreciate your service. I think you guys are doing a great job. I've been here several times, but this time I just came to share my views on the plan that this group made for 3 years. We have RCAC, Kara Nielsen, EJCW, and me, the San Genaro community. And we worked for 3 years checking out the problems that we have in the Salinas Valley with disadvantaged communities. And I have to go back to my notes because I tend to forget what I wanted to mention to you. But most of these disadvantaged communities that we check into it, we have like seven real high priority communities, and there are many other ones that we were not able to go deeply because of the time and not enough staff to go all over the Salinas Valley. But these people, they're still, they have decades of being with contaminated water. And one of the worst problems for them is to worrying always about their kids not drinking contaminated water. So their moms are always the ones that have more worries about it, because they always have to be watching their kids to make sure that they don't drink contaminated water. And they have to travel like from Moss Landing to Watsonville to get their water for cooking and cleaning their teeth and drinking. But they still have to be bathing on contaminated water. So, these are the issues that we face in here in the Salinas Valley and many parts of California because of the many contaminants on Some of them are human, they're human made, and some of them are natural occurring. But, you know, it's the reality. And we're trying to look for solutions for everybody. So on this plant, you know, also one of the ladies that is not here is Susan Robinson. She is the director of for the IRWM for Monterey County, and she did a lot of writing on this, and many other people that were involved in this program. But just to one of the things that I see, in my opinion, is that these communities they just need a lot of help. If we don't give them help by the state and local agencies and the same communities, they're going to stay behind for years and years to come. So there's a great need for helping these communities. I know that, you know, every time I come here, I just come to bring you problems, but this is what is happening, and I know that you guys are doing the best you can, but if we can do more, a little bit more, I think there will be less suffering for people that they're risking their health. We don't know which way they can get sick. But we know that anybody that is exposed to contaminated water, somehow they can get sick. You know, as board member Karina was saying, you know, when you shower, if you have any effects, we don't know that. But the community of San Gerardo, we did. You know, just by showering, people were getting sick. As soon as the filtration system was implemented in San Gerardo, the sicknesses went away. We already have 7 years in San Gerardo with clean water. The affordability is 500% higher. You know, the rates are 500%. But still, people, they prefer to pay money and have clean water. So I just want to ask you that keep supporting in any way, any program, any solution that can be done in the Salinas Valley. I know you have so many problems in so many areas, but if you can, please keep supporting this, especially disadvantaged communities. You know, some people have polluted water, but they have the money to fix the problems. Many of these communities, they don't. And as you know, that we have nitrates, we have other natural occurring chemicals that are appearing, arsenic. We have seawater intrusion that is coming into the valley. So this is going to take a lot of effort from the state, local, and citizens. We all have to pitch in. So anyway, thank you so much for having me and listen to me. So I have some other.
Sure. And what I'd like to do, you know, at the end, if I would like you to come back, because you're here as general manager of the San Gerardo Cooperative, and I had a couple of update questions which I think is appropriate to ask, you know, in the big picture of coalition on water, et cetera. So
sure.
I'll let everybody finish so I don't take this out of sequence, but
okay.
I'll take advantage that you're here to ask you a couple of updates.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So again, I just wanted to thank the board, and thank you, Horacio. The next part, I want to provide a general overview what the IRWM DAC plan actually was the project objectives and the tasks. So the first project, I know you can read, but this is very essential for the rest of the remaining of the presentation. The number one need, or the number one objective, was to identify disadvantaged communities in the planning region. So although there was over 20 communities that were identified, the project team listed seven that you'll see further on in the presentation, seven communities that we're currently directly working on. And I wanted to highlight two of those communities that we'll be addressing towards the end of the presentation. That's Johnson Road, that's very near from here, near Las Lomas Royal Oaks community, and the Middlefield Road right in the outskirts of Salinas. As we have seen within the high need and the high priority area of the plan, we've identified those specific communities because their nitrate levels are exceeding the MCL, not just by one or two or three times, in many cases four times. And the data has shown that for many years, these communities have been on bottled water, especially Johnson Road. They're on their second term of bottled water that's been renewed for another 2 years. And as we're moving projects forward, we have 4 years of them being on interim bottled water as we're trying to work for long-term water solutions. Trying to identify the communities and also identify solutions, the reason why I bring that up is it takes years, and it takes a very long process. And that's one of the reasons why the project team is here today, present here today, to reaffirm the importance of this plan, reaffirm the importance of the recommendations, and to applaud the work that you're doing in regards to enforcement, in regards to support disadvantaged communities. With that being said, I would want to continue with the presentation, and we have Karen Nielsen with Nielsen & Associates to kind of give you an overview of the plan and talk about some certain issues we've been dealing with trying to find long-term solutions. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Karen Nielsen. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about the plan that we've been working on so long. I wanted to just skip to the next slide, please. Got a slide here? Okay. With the disadvantaged communities, we primarily looked at census data as expressed through the American Community Survey data. And in doing that, we have identified certain communities that are income eligible in terms of meeting the criteria as disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged. But those surveys and the census data don't drill down far enough to what we're calling hidden DACs, or those small communities that are within the larger census areas. Could be five households, it could be 25 households, but they're a subset of these larger, higher income census tracts, and in many cases, they're the ones who can't afford any solution to their water or wastewater problems. So we've identified, as I said, these certain communities that we're working with that are the higher priorities, but we understand that there are many, many more outside of this group that we're working with that need attention. And so you'll see later on in the recommendations, we are going to be working with other programs, but none of them are really adequate to fully address this identification problem. So as part of the DAC pilot project that this report came out of, we worked with regional board staff, with UC Davis, and with the county and coming up with a database to identify problems and to look at concentrations of nitrate contamination primarily, but also other pollutants as we were able to. And one problem that I'll mention back to the last slide is that there is no existing funding mechanism for updating this tool. So we're in the process right now of trying to figure out a source of funding for it. So as you can see in the map slide, there are certain areas of concentration where we've identified problems. It's primarily in the North County area of Monterey County and then along the central Salinas area. North County, as you can see, has the highest number of identified problem areas, but again, we're basing this on incomplete data. It's data that's either provided by public water systems or state and local small systems. It's not reaching domestic well owners, and not all of the local smalls report out on a regular basis in terms of what their contamination issues are. So of the 20-some-odd that we initially identified, 13 were high-priority communities, 5 medium-priority, and 2 lower-priority communities. And we've kind of juggled those around a little bit. As some of you may know, there was a UCLA pilot project that is working with 3 of the communities that were included in our group and then one other. So we've sort of dialed back our participation on those and have taken on 1 or 2 other communities that we'll be working with. Of the high-priority communities, 1 was outside of the city of Soledad. There are a couple sort of concentrated around the Salinas area, greater Salinas area, and then several in North County. So what problems have we found with the communities? Because the focus was mainly on these very small communities, as you can imagine, there have been problems with the existing infrastructure. Because they're so tiny, there is no economy of scale in trying to address their issues. They're unable to afford much in terms of supporting financing on their own to cover capital costs. And one of the key problems is that we found that they tend to lack any technical, managerial, or the financial capacity to carry out improvements or to manage systems on a long-term basis. And another very critical thing is that in many cases there is no legal entity that manages the system. In some cases there's a mutual, but in a lot of cases it's informal arrangements. It may be one property owner who has a small system that just serves the rental units on his property, for instance. In most cases, they depend on a single source of water. And because of that, if something happens, if a well goes dry or contamination gets worse, they have no backup. And in many cases, they're geographically isolated in such a way that they're not good candidates for consolidation. And then lastly, and this sort of is a recurring theme, they don't have reserve funds. So we get back to a lot of money issues in looking at the small systems. So I've already kind of covered this. So this little chart is kind of a synopsis of the seven main communities that we work with. There's one more, Bluff Jensen, which is just across the county line here. Santa Teresa is a project that UCLA is also involved in, so we're not currently actively pursuing that one until the pilot project has been completed. Middlefield Road, Moises will be talking about that in a few minutes. Gauche Road, we got pretty far along with that, but the neighborhood buy-in hasn't been thoroughly explored. So there needs to be community engagement on that one. Walnut Avenue is a small system that has a possibility of consolidation with the city of Greenfield, but there are issues involved there that are going to take some time to resolve. And then Johnson Road, Moises will also talk about that one. Hudson Landing has a number of issues. We're looking into consolidation with Pajaro Sunny Mesa. And then Apple Avenue, we're actively working with the city of Greenfield on a consolidation. So that one is likely to be the first one to be finished. So in terms of the contamination issues, they're just as presented there. Obviously, we were primarily looking at nitrates. The Chrome 6 is, we're kind of on hold with that one. And of these communities, there's only one that had evidence of 123 TCP. And that one we're actively working on. The trend has been for an increase in nitrate contamination levels. And I imagine that that's very well known to you. And then the last thing here on the findings, the need for increased community engagement. We're finding that it's not just one community meeting or one contact with a property owner that's needed to get their interest levels up and to even communicate clearly what needs to happen next to engage them in coming up with solutions. It's multiple times that are needed to have these contacts and over a period of time, and you have to evolve the solution with them. And so this need for increased community engagement is vital. And we do have a grant that we're hoping will kick in here pretty soon to do community engagement, maybe by late spring. So that's a positive. And then this is sort of the next one, number four, need for project sponsorship. This is one that we've been kicking around for a year or more. There are basically two types of sponsorship. One would be this initial looking at potential solutions, doing a preliminary grant application, and then ultimately there needs to be somebody who can provide long-term assistance, whether it's through a consolidation or a management agreement or some other sort of resource sharing. And that is, I would say, our primary barrier to moving forward with these projects. In terms of project sponsorship, we've made contact with the county. We've worked with the IRWIMP group. We've worked with Cal Water and with some of the smaller mutual water systems to try and work out where there can be some accommodation for these systems. And this is an area that we think needs a lot more work, and we'll be speaking to that later. And then this one, lateral costs. there are funding sources available to cover the cost to install a new water system. Currently, there are very limited funds available to actually go from where the water line and the meter are to the house or to the apartment building. And those costs can sometimes be quite high. And then in addition, there's the issue if they have their own well, that well has to be abandoned in most cases. And there are costs involved with that where, you know, the well has to be filled and there have to be permits from the county. Those costs can be significant for any homeowner or household, but in the case of disadvantaged communities, they can present an insurmountable barrier. Depending on how far they are from the street or wherever the location of the line is going to be, it could be anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 easily. And there isn't, as I say, currently a source of funding for that in most cases. We just applied to the County of Monterey for community development block grant funds, but it's really only enough to maybe help 20 households, and we don't know if we're going to get that. So this, again, is an area of concern. And now...
Thank you, Karen. Before I go to the request from the board, I want to go back to Middlefield Road and Johnson Road that I wanted to address. These are the two projects that I've worked along with the most since I started my tenure at EJCW. And I will say that going back to what Karen mentioned in regards to working with public utility companies or working with government agencies, regional agencies, there comes a point where we do everything that we can as an organization to try to advance a project. And there's always an unsent email in regards to another entity. It takes a village to try to advance a project. It really does take a village. And with Middlefield Road, we found that our conversations with some of our partners trying to advance a project forward, they either do not take our phone calls, do not respond to our emails, and in turn prolong a project. In Johnson Road, same circumstance. Apple Ave, although we're working with the city of Greenfield, the response time... Are we good on time?
Well, the answer is yes, but we'll give you a little extra time.
Okay, sorry. We're finishing up here. The lag time that it takes really prolongs a project, and we've seen with Apple Ave, Mr. Rocha and the Middlestead family have waited more over 5 years. They had applied for funding before, and the funding ran out before they could get their services. So as we're trying to advance Apple Avenue right now, we found that as an organization and as a team, we've done what we can to advance a project. But what we're asking from the board is, especially today, is staff support that would help us address the problems with project sponsorship. In regards to Johnson Road, we still have yet to find someone who will take on a project sponsorship, either Cal Water or the county, and we've kind of hit a wall there where either are not. So as we're here today, part of our ask is there a way that the board could provide a staff member to be the convener between different agencies to try to move these projects forward. We don't want communities to wait any longer for long-term drinking water solutions. Then to add to that, we ask the board, kindly ask the board that you support or you formally advocate for the inclusion and the implementation of lateral costs for construction grants. Right now, they're currently excluded. And in Middlefield Road specifically, Cal Water has put a contingency that the only way that it would advance a project forward is if community members themselves sign a request to serve letter that they themselves make themselves they make themselves responsible for covering the costs. And it is a disadvantaged community. The MHI has proven that. And a lot of the times that stalls the project where community members cannot advance the they cannot find the funding for it. And we have applied for CDBG funding, but it's not guaranteed. So when we go back to community members and we've done that application, and if we don't get it, that sound of deception also kills the morale for a community to advance a project forward or interest for long-term water solutions. At this moment in time, thank you. I mean, thank you for your time, and again, thank you for your support and the work that you're doing. And I want to thank Angela and Matt Keeling for their strong support in environmental justice in this area. And thank you, the project team, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So questions, comments?
So there's two points that you're really asking us for support on. One is the question of qualified sponsors, and the other is the question of lateral cost. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I understand the problem with the qualified sponsors. I've talked at different points to Heather Lukacs and others about that question in terms of Johnson Road, where Pajaro Sunny Mesa, I believe, is the agency that is willing to take them on, but is not really willing to be the sponsor, even though there's grant funding for the construction, because that funding often comes, first of all, the administrative costs, and second, that funding reimbursement often comes a long time after the money's dispersed, and it's a cash flow question for a small district like Pajaro Community, Pajaro Sunny Mesa. So I guess my question to you know is it seems like it kind of conceptually what I have in mind is, well, it would be nice if the state's given authority, you know, legally given authority to the water board to order consolidations, but this is a whole nother kettle of fish. And, you know, conceptually, my thought's always been we should be setting up some sort of an agency that can fulfill this function, but that's sort of way above our pay grade right now. That's a legislative question. So is what you're asking that we provide staff to help pull the parties together to talk about it, or that we advocate legislatively for this?
It would be the
or something else.
The first part, I think, of the first part of convening and bringing the groups together would be a first step into that direction, where we find or we have a conversation of why they don't want to take on a project sponsorship. Sometimes we don't know that information, or because they don't respond to either our calls or our emails, we don't know what's happening on their end.
And okay, so what you're asking for is that staff, which potentially has more weight with some of these entities than you do, play a sort of a facilitating role.
Yes.
Okay, that helps to clarify it, and I might ask that after other board members have asked their questions, that maybe staff kind of responds on that issue. Other board members might have questions that can avoid asking staff repetitive questions. On the lateral costs, is the problem that the that the structure of the state funding doesn't allow for paying lateral costs, or that you have to complete an application, or you have to have an agreement first before you can ask for the money to pay lateral costs, and you don't know, you have a cart and a horse problem, a chicken and egg problem?
A little bit of both, but Cameron would be best qualified to answer that question.
Currently, the way the drinking water program, state revolving fund, is structured, they don't allow for covering the cost of laterals. In the wastewater program, they do. So there has been discussion at the staff level to add that in to the drinking water revolving fund. And we're hopeful that that would happen, but the staff people we've talked to in Sacramento have not, they've sort of advised don't hold your breath. So it's a problem that we face right now. It's not a funding that's available at the state. It's an eligible grant activity under certain programs at the federal level, one of which I mentioned we just applied for just weeks ago. But we won't know about that for some time. And as I said, it's only going to help 20 households at the most, and we're dealing with a lot more than that cumulatively here.
So at the state level, is the fact that the revolving funds don't pay for lateral construction a legislative issue or a rulemaking issue?
I think it's a rulemaking issue.
Okay.
Because they were talking about if they change the intended use plan, that it could happen as early as this summer sometime.
So what you're asking us for then is to agitate with state board staff, who sometimes listen to us and sometimes don't, to change their funding rules.
Right.
Okay, it's not a legislative question.
Right. And I don't know if it's a CPUC problem with, for instance, Cal Water or other public utilities that they can't cover lateral costs. That hasn't really been explained so far. So we don't know what basis they have for saying that they want somebody else to be responsible for it.
I imagine they don't want their existing ratepayers to pay for it. They want it to come in. I don't have any idea. So in any case, once again, once everybody's had their whack at this, maybe we can hear from staff on this.
Thank you. I just have some clarifying questions, and I apologize if I'm asking about things that you have already conveyed, but I just want to get the kind of the lay of the land here. So the planning committee, some of whom are here today, with EJCW, have been participating in the integrated regional water management process. Is that how this committee fits?
Yes.
Okay. And so in the RWM county process, the additional members of that process have identified and support the disadvantaged community component to that broader regional management planning process. Okay. And in that effort, then your subcommittee is providing as much additional information and data to that broader regional planning effort. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So on that end of it, are they also in a position to advocate for the sponsor, meeting those sponsorship gaps? And are they also prioritizing or searching across the potential available funds for lateral connection for these identified, yet to be identified in some cases, disadvantaged community, these little small little clusters? Is that a priority that they have taken into their program?
Yes, they have. And since my time at EJCW, I've been a part of several meetings with our technical advisory committee where conversations have been had with the county to try to see if the county could take on these roles. And quite frankly, the response has been it's out of their capacity or it's not within their mission to become project sponsors.
But it is in the plan, it is in the IRWM plan, recognized as a gap or an area of high need or...
Yeah, it's in the recommendation section.
Okay. So that, to me, I mean, that gives you standing in terms of Department of Water Resources, in terms of other bond water funds that are coming through, and with the State Water Board. And not that those are easy entities to deal with, but it does matter that IRWM has incorporated these issues and is elevating your committee data and information and feedback, and also identifying gaps where you still need to do more work. But it does help the prioritization that I see going on, helping the state system to understand of the 20, seven are urgent and two have some potential and so forth. So there could be, I'm wondering, and maybe staff knows this, if the State Water Board is willing or can also become a part of that convening to look at consolidation, because that definitely falls into our, am I right? That definitely, John, Mr. Robin, that definitely falls into our camp.
With respect to consolidation?
Consolidation,
so
yeah.
that's housed under Division of Drinking Water, that authority. We can consult with Division of Drinking Water, and we do on cases like this.
So it's specifically Apple Road, and what was the other one that was?
Specifically right now it's Middlefield Road and Johnson Road.
And Johnson Road that are eligible for consolidation.
That we, well, for Middlefield we have the MHI, and we're looking forward to consolidate, yes.
And I'm sorry, I thought it was Apple Avenue that was...
Apple closing. Avenue is a project that's it's already in the works. So
okay.
They were able to get a government loan to cover the lateral costs.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I thought Johnson Road was isolated and couldn't be considered for consolidation.
Well, Johnson Road, there is a Cal Water Las Lomas that's nearby, and Cal Water has been in talks with us to be consolidated.
So there is some discussion there.
Yeah.
Okay. So Middlefield is where there's no – that you've not had any possibility yet open up, even for dialogue. Okay. So there's one that we could put forward to Division of Drinking Water for consolidation. So that's on consolidation on laterals. I understand there's – never enough money, but of all times to be working on this and moving this information out and and coming forward with numbers, all of this matters in this greater process that is going on relative to DAC. So it is a priority item. I know that, and I'm always glad to see Mr. Mosquito. When he comes, he has so much information to share with us and so much knowledge. And that matters in this effort statewide. We're competing with areas that have very similar kinds of problems, maybe different types of pollutants, but similar kinds of problems. We just have to make sure we're always in those discussions and always ready with the latest information we have. And so... what I hear from you today is a great deal more than we knew. And, at the risk of sounding, naive, to me it's build it, they will come. It always is. You just have to keep moving, and you have to keep putting the picture in place and filling in those gaps. And at some point, the readiness factor is so obvious to everybody that things can happen. But it is unfortunate how long it is taking. But thank you to EJCW for keeping that effort focused and moving forward and engaging with the various opportunities that come and go. But cumulatively, the processes that you've engaged in and that you've helped to bring to the community and raise their awareness, a lot of activity coming out of that, including community engagement. I know it needs to keep, that's where EJCW really plays a critical role, is keeping that engagement and supporting those most impacted in the community. They're definitely advocating for solutions, but others in the community need to help simply because they're neighbors, simply because it takes more than one family to raise the level of urgency. And so I thank EJCW for doing that. And I think Ms. Nielsen commented about the number of community meetings, right? It takes, you have to keep repeating and repeating and repeating what the problem is, what the solutions are, and they are changing. I'm with Mr. Johnston in seeing from all across the board, you know, what other ideas we might have, and from hearing from staff to see where we fit into the broad list of things that you raised and the activities that are still in play. Where's the IRWM process right now?
Well, right now, EJCW is carrying out an update of the plan, and we're doing at least EJCW's portion. I can't speak for the rest of the team right now, but EJCW is updating the plan, and we're doing outreach, and we're doing community education, and part of that education comes in with informing non-contacts that we've had around communities that we're currently working in, providing them education about the Central Coast water testing program that's being carried forward by Mr. Keeling. Mm-hmm. We're doing door-to-door, one-on-one meetings, and sending out mailers, informing them about who, what the plan is, who EJCW is, and who the opportunities they have for domestic well testing, as well as the contaminants that have been found in their region.
Just a thought, and you probably are aware of this. Have you worked with the California Endowment? Because I know they do have an office. I think one of their 10 offices is in Salinas. And that they're all about public health. And I don't think this is on their radar. And it's a question I've had for the last probably 4 or 5 years. And I think it's a connection that should be made. There is money there that has to be spent on public health issues, low income, and language, you know, constraints and so forth. So I am hoping, I know I worked with Francisco Lara when he was with EJCW. We spoke at length about where resources could be found. In other words, it's like it's a patchwork quilt. There's money from different places to do different things, and I know you understand that really well, being with EJCW, but I still have not seen the California Endowment tapped, and I think someone should connect with them and make a case that the education, it should be to the clinics, it should be to the schools, it should be to those institutional elements of our community that need to be disseminating this information. I applaud your one-on-one. I think for some residents, that is the only way they're going to find out about it. They are cloistered. They don't want to be contacted by anybody, and they don't want to be talking to people they don't know. But in other ways, there are professionals that are in position to add this to their program, programmatically, so that it is institutionalized and it's not depending on you, Moises, or Heather, or others who have put in time at EJCW, built relationships, and then they have to move on, and then we're back to square one. So I mean, if I can help with the California Endowment, I would love to be a person to help make that connection, and let's just find out once and for all, can they help with this? Because the outreach is costly, but it is a health issue, and it should be on their radar. And that's one area that I think we haven't done anything yet, as far as I know.
Thank you for that. Now, we had not worked with California Endowment, so that's a great suggestion. Thank you.
Ms. Cervantes, any? Okay. So before we get to Mr. Johnson, a couple of points, one which was to wear our hat of being facilitators. You know, we have two hats. We need to remind ourselves, us here and then staff on your side. We're both regulators and facilitators, and we should never forget that. So that's one item. The second one, of course, is the issue of the lateral. But I wanted to have an update because hopefully this might show the effectiveness of a facilitation role. So now I'm going to ask Horacio if you can come to the podium. About two, three years ago, we came to visit you. Remember that?
Yes.
And then later on, we got to find out that your water facility was going to be potentially put for sale.
It's already for sale.
And yet, that facility was built with taxpayers' money.
Correct.
So when I heard that, I nearly choked. And I recall then with the... with Dr. Hunter, we're like, we got to do something here. And then I requested specifically, we requested, you know, staff to give us update. And I believe this was with Ms. Schroeder. And then I remember having conversation with our executive officer about we need to stop this. And if needed, I said, I'll pick up the phone and I'll talk to the supervisors myself, because putting something for sale, which basically it's monetizing grant money, to me, this is very conflicting. So since you're here, and I think it's topical to this big conversation, can you give us an update?
Sure. We've been knowing this for about 2 years.
Right.
And we asked the county, you know, you represent us in getting these grants because it was a public health issue that was happening in San Gerardo. So the public works submitted the application for the water project. And, you know, the county was saying, okay, we have to raise the rates, we have to raise the rates. And it was already 500%. I said, well, why don't you use us and we'll do the administration, and you just, the way you're managing right now is you just paying a certified operator to operate, but none of the county employees do anything. They just pay someone to manage it, and then they read the meters. So the average price that we're paying is $100 a month. And When they said, well, we don't think that you're capable of running it. So we went to the state water board and said, look, the county is going to sell this project, and it was made with public money, and we think San Gerardo can operate it better than the county, and we can even maybe reduce the rates. So the RCAC helped us put a rate study. They submitted to the state water board staff, and they came back and said, no, you guys are going to be needing grants, and we don't want that. So we have, you know, for 10 years, we were not able to refinance. When the new water system came along, we went to refinance. It was a 50-year loan for that community. We were able to refinance. Now we have money, about more than $700,000 that we have saved on the refinance deal that we did. So we told the state water board, okay, we don't want to rely on grants. Tell us what we need. They said, well, you can, instead of putting $150,000 on a reserve, we want you to put $550,000. I went back to the board of San Gerardo. They said, we'll do whatever it takes. We'll put it in. And then they came back again and said, well, you're going to be losing money. So what do we do? Said, you have to raise the rates. I went back to the community and told them, The only way that we may qualify to get the water system is that if we raise the rates. The community said, we don't care. We want to get the, we want to see that the water system stays in the community because we think that it will be better for the community, more affordable and more secure that we have the water instead of CalAmp buying it. So I don't know what the state water, the staff on the state water board is going to do. We already submitted another rate study, putting the rates higher, so we didn't show losses on the rate study. So we've been working with them like probably more than a year, and we haven't got any response of if we qualify or not. And we're getting help from Terry Nielsen, RCAC, to make sure that we present everything to the State Water Board, staff, financials, current financials, new rate study, all the things that they ask us, we provide them. Another thing, if they sell this project, they're going to raise the rates. It's going to become unaffordable. Right now, the only way the people in San Gerardo, some of them, they live on $400 per month on Social Security. And other ones, they live on $800. The only way they're surviving is because San Gerardo provides them rent subsidies. So instead of paying $430, they only pay $51. So they have money left to pay for electricity, water, and gas. Otherwise, they will not be able to make it.
So the reason I wanted to bring this up, because I think this is a very good, you know, example where when we talk about facilitators, I think there's also the importance of follow-through. I mean, we had state board members who came to, you know, to the meeting. This was, what, 2 years ago, Monica? So, you know, we visited the different sites, and, you know, there was all kinds of congratulatory emails back and forth. It sounds like we're... So, Angela, could you maybe give a little ray of sunshine in this whole thing?
Not sure it's going to be a ray of sunshine, but I can definitely provide a little bit more information. And Horacio knows that we're very committed to helping the community of San Gerardo and really advocating for them. So after two environmental justice tours where we had discussed these issues, and that the most recent one where Horacio made us aware that there was a pending sale, I would say that there was a very high level of intervention supported by both, I think it was Ken Harris at the time,
yep.
As well as John Robertson. We engaged both the Division of Financial Assistance, the Division of Drinking Water. We spoke with Monterey County Public Works. We put in writing, I think at that time, our objection to the potential sale of the system, and also the importance of making sure that there was affordability with rates for the community. And State Board did go through their very long process to evaluate technical and managerial feasibility. At the end of the day, and what my understanding, Horacio, and this is after several iterations of there's not enough information, provide us more information, not enough information, providing us more information, they have come to the conclusion that San Gerardo does not have the technical, managerial, and financial capacity to run the system. And it's my understanding that they've brought up a couple of things, and that is the reserves. I think one of the issues is the reserves, and I'm not quite sure. They have their own accountant who's looking at all these issues. But it's my understanding that they've made that determination, that the community just doesn't have the TMF capacity. Our response to that has been to show us, demonstrate to us why that is. But in any case, whoever takes over the system has to be able to maintain affordability and rates for the community. So that's sort of really the back-end conversation that we have had. But you're correct, Chair Wolf, that after very significant intervention, both with the county level and with State Board, it doesn't appear that we've changed the situation very much for the community of San Gerardo.
So, and help me understand, who in Sacramento, which division of the Water Board, it's in their wheelhouse, this decision?
Is James Mon?
Financial assistance, I believe.
I just received an email today where we're requesting from that trend is the guy in charge of this issue with San Gerardo, and it looks like they want to meet with us because, according to them, San Gerardo is not financially capable of running the system. But my argument to them is that, you know, San Gerardo, we were not able to refinance for 12 years because polluted water. And when we were able to refinance, we were saving about $70,000 a year just on the refinance thing. We were about $180,000 of reserves for the project. And now we're over $730,000 on reserves. And what they're saying is that our financial statements, they look like if we're not making any money, but they're not paying attention that the depreciation that the accounts put in as a cost, it looks that San Gerardo is not making any money. But if you look how the cash went up and up and up, that's what it matters. So we're trying to have a meeting with staff at the State Water Board and have them explain us to us why we don't qualify, because so far they haven't given us any numbers. Why don't we qualify?
Yeah, and I'm sorry to my colleagues if maybe feel like, you know, this drag on, but I think this is important because when we talk about being facilitators, we went to a site, we put a lot of effort. It's a little concerning that this is still, you know, being privatized.
This is a microcosm of the long-term issue that we need to solve. I mean, this is part and parcel of, you know, we have these short-term solutions, but we really need to come to closure on some sort of strategy to deal with this on a long-term basis. And it's exceedingly frustrating to spend time and effort only to see it not be realized. So this is a huge issue. And, I mean, there is money in SB5, you know, for water infrastructure, but it's $63 million or something, which certainly doesn't provide a lot of cover for the state. So it's an issue that we really, I think, need to find a good solution for.
I just want to say that the alternative of privatization in this situation, from everything I know, it would just make everything worse. So I hope that there's some solution to not go that direction.
So what do we need to do, Mr. Robertson, to turn this around?
So,
a trip to Sacramento?
I'm gonna start a little earlier than right now. Stealing from Moise's words, we've acted as conveners or facilitators with respect to the dialogue between Financial Assistance, Division of Drinking Water, County. Angela has hosted a number of meetings to try to ascertain exactly what San Gerardo needs to do to demonstrate. I think we need to go another round with that to get clarity on exactly what it is. It feels like the definition of compliance here is shifting. We'll give you that. Okay, so actually we wanted a different colored rock. So I think we need to participate in another go around it with I think it's financial assistance in this case, and then we'll come back. I'll come back with the chair, and we'll talk about what we learned from that, and maybe then we task a subcommittee to pursue this issue.
And I'm not as well-versed as Monica and Jean-Pierre and some of the other board members, I think, on this. But it seems to me that the smaller communities are missing out because of an economy of scale issue. That they're small, they don't have the resources. Consolidation is not necessarily always a feasible thing. And I'm wondering if there isn't something else that could be pursued where these different communities are able to maybe combine some of their administrative needs or financial needs or management needs so that you've got a floating administration or...
Might I suggest a virtual consolidation?
Right. So
yeah, kind of a...
We talked about that at a previous board meeting, was a virtual consolidation a couple months ago, maybe 3-4 months ago.
And that's being experimented with yeah. For example, the UCLA mm-hmm. Trio of right. facilities. Yeah. There's to put a name on it, it's the technical, managerial, and financial issues. Those three things are
chronic. And, John,
can
that be shared? Can, like, technical expertise that you need in a small community,
yes.
can
yes.
that be shared?
Yes.
Instead
of hiring an operator, you could hire a piece of an operator, for
Correct.
Example.
Yeah, in fact,
yeah.
to support, you know, your answer and your question, right in my area where I live, there are small... drinking water communities, there is one person who's managing three facilities. So he takes care of the water sampling, the reports. Done. So it does exist. Yeah. Fill out all the paperwork and then, you know, this is more drinking water division area of knowledge, but you also, of course, have to have a certain the credentials and the license. It's not like anybody can say, "Yeah, I'll do it." You know, so this individual, that's what he does. Three locations.
There's a capacity issue, I guess, a managerial capacity issue too. It can be done. If the question is, can it be done? Yes, it can be done. How does it happen, then, is probably the next question. And that's really challenging. These small systems tend to be locally run, I mean, by residents in the system. You know, they're shoestring together. And we recognize that there needs to be some sort of overstructure here that creates the effect of an economy of scale and provides managerial skill and technical skill, or hires the technical skill that can be bought. And we're working on that. We recognize that. I don't want to go into a lot of detail because we're literally in discussions right now. But we recognize the staff, the need for that sort of umbrella entity to exist. We're trying to find other places in the state where they've been successful, because it's been successful in other places in the state.
So with water?
Yeah, with water supply, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and water supply projects funded just everything we're talking about right now.
So, you know, before we move to Mike's two questions, just to bring this to closure, I'd like to have a agreed action step. And the agreed action step is, through your delegation of staff, is let's follow up on this. I'm getting to take this personally because we spent so much time. Sorry, I shouldn't do that, but you know, it's getting frustrating. So let's work on this. And I'm glad you came today, because I'm like, aha. Opportunity to see where we are with this project.
I have a comment. You know, that project there was made for the community, but that system can be expanded to other communities that have polluted water because it was made for the public. There's places where where there's no water rights, and they have 4,000 or 5,000 people in one water system, and they pay around $50 a year. They just pay for maintaining the system and paying the operation, but the water is public. Oh, and the community of San Gerardo, there's sometimes 8 wells running at the same time when you only need one. So it's a waste of energy, a waste of water. So,
So Monica, just one last comment, and then we move to Mike's items.
So, with the idea that the state board does not change their opinion that they've reached at this point, although it's encouraging to hear they called and asked for another meeting with you. So hopefully some discussion to clarify, and as Mr. Robertson noted, a kind of shifting set of conditions that they expect you to meet. But let's say that the state board continues to reject or to find their incapacity to manage the system for the long haul. You mentioned the idea that there would be, if it goes to a private water system, that there would be affordability constraints. And I know that in utilities, I'm not familiar enough with water as in particular, but I know in utilities there is a low income, like the Lifeline kind of criteria for seniors and disabled and, in my opinion, low-income disadvantaged community members. Is that something that's rock solid? If an affordability clause were put into a purchase agreement, that it would cover, it would be conditioned in such a way that would cover anyone, to your point, Horacio, that there are others in the surrounding area that would tie into this better quality water, that it would apply to anybody, including San Gerardo. Is that within the regulations and the way these agreements are written, or is it would be on the state board and or Division of Drinking Water to establish it as a unique kind of thing? And then the other thing I wanted to find out about, and I'm not sure how this sits with your comment about expanding it, but I would also be worried that a private water system would be looking for this water to support growth. And I'm wondering if, I don't know, there's a CEQA element to this and growth inducement with a bit more water available, that would lead to those nice big McMansions. No offense to anybody, but big homes that are being built in these areas, right? You know, neighbor to neighbor, big house, little house. And that would be a concern that I would think in the Monterey County area, the state would be attuned to that, because the water supply issue throughout the greater Monterey County area is just a huge headache all the way around, no matter what status your economics are. There just isn't enough water for everybody. So those two things would concern me if it does move to privatization. So I hope there is either regulatory language or other conditions that would be applied to assure the affordability for all low-income and others who meet the criteria, and that the growth inducement of additional water supply would not go to home building, but, as Horacio mentioned, to other areas that are dealing with contaminated water and have no other or very few options and no money. So those things I would put on the list for the discussion.
So Mr. Johnson has been patiently waiting for us to address.
Before we get to my two questions, I do have a question about San Gerardo.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Since it's come up. I'm a little confused. As I understand it, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the state board, but that's about the state board funding a purchase or participating in a purchase by San Gerardo of the system, right? Doesn't the system belong to Monterey County? So when we talk about putting conditions on the sale, the state board's not going to do that, right? Isn't that Monterey County that would have to do that?
Well, in our, Angela Schroeder's water board, in my discussions with both state board and Monterey County, because that project was funded by state grant funds, they can condition the transfer of the system. And in response to Monica's questions specifically, they can require that it meets the same affordability Thank standards you. That it did before. And so not knowing the outcome, that's the part that I would actually push upon now. There's been a question mark as to the enforceability of that in the long term, but that's something that maybe this board or the state board could establish some accountability on that.
Right. Now let's cover your two items.
Sure. I can repeat those questions. With regard to the more broad questions that were raised in this presentation, the first question, I'm trying to remember, it was back a long time ago. The first question was with regards to sponsoring agencies and our ability to put some staff time into serving as conveners for those discussions and trying to bring people to the table who aren't necessarily answering the phone when ECJW calls. And I realize we sometimes tend to give staff a lot of direction, and every action has consequences in terms of what doesn't get done. So I want to hear about that. And the second question was the second request made in this presentation of this board was that they requested that we as a region exercise whatever influence we have with the state board in terms of how revolving funds money are allowed to be dispersed regarding payment for laterals in disadvantaged communities. And those are the two very specific requests. And by the way, I want to thank you folks for having very specific asks of us, because sometimes it's a little overwhelming. So I'd like to hear from staff on those two specific asks that were made.
So I'm gonna take them in reverse order. So with respect to the lateral question and building that in, it sounds like it's what we're talking about are the rules associated with Division of Drinking Water's SRF, the Clean Water SRF. I'm less familiar with that than the wastewater one. But we do have experience with speaking with financial assistants that the division inside State Board that manages money, including revolving funds. And we've had success in the past in getting them to change rules associated with, for example, disadvantaged communities and what they will or will not compensate associated with disadvantaged communities. So using that as a guide, I think I still have some learning to do with respect to who to talk to there and who owns the rulemaking authority. But I think that's okay. We can look into it, and I think we can apply some pressure based on past success in that.
And that sounds like a relatively minor lift in terms of staff time. It's not nothing.
Right, right. But I think you're right. I think it's a few conversations or periodic conversations with very likely DFA staff. So I have to do a little education. That's my perspective right now. I may be off a little bit there, but I think that's not that heavy a lift. With respect to acting in the role of facilitators or conveners, I think that's actually a role we've already taken on with respect to, for example, San Gerardo. It doesn't guarantee success, as we're watching play out in this last story. But I think we can actually, and it is a much heavier lift in terms of hours. It's a role we can do a better job of, and maybe we can couple it with other, you know, look for synergistic opportunities, I'll say, couple it with other conversations we might be having with, for example, Soledad, you know, that couple up with our wastewater, a wastewater discussion we might be having with the community. As I look at the list inside the executive summary, though, I mean, these are a fair number of them are the same communities we talked about when we were on the EJ tour. Santa Teresa, for example. I look at that and I think, well, UCLA pilot project will be there for a while, but does that equate to, as you said, Mr. Johnson, long-term replacement water, interim long-term replacement water? I don't think it means permanent replacement water. I think there's yet one more version of replacement water beyond UCLA, which probably looks like consolidation with Soledad, just as an example. That's a place where I think we can, we probably actually should facilitate those talks right now, even though UCLA is going to come online theoretically in the next year, because it takes that long for a consolidation project to run its course, too. It's almost like you have to have consecutive projects going at the same time.
And I would remind you that I believe, if I understood it correctly, that the specific request we were getting wasn't to take on to facilitating all of these, even all of these high priority communities getting their problems solved. It was in situations where there is actually potentially grant money, but the problem is finding a sponsoring agency to facilitate that discussion.
Right, to take on that role.
A narrower definition of kind of what the universe is.
Easier conversation, I'll be honest, we've tried this conversation quite a few times. It doesn't mean stop doing it. It means change how you're doing it, because it's not succeeding the way you're doing it right now. I don't think we should quit. I think we have to change. But I'll say in Monterey County, we've been having this discussion with some of the standard options there, and have not met with success.
So I'm trying to unpack your answer.
I'm trying to be
answer. Coy
there.
You are being coy, yes. And I'm just trying to understand, you know, are you saying, well, we're already trying, we'll continue to try, it doesn't always work? Are you saying, I want to look for opportunities and I'll get back to you, or what?
I think we need to grow some new entities. I think the usual cast of characters is not gonna bear fruit at this time.
Okay. Well,
so I think we got to grow some new entities here. Invite
grow
some new
some
entities.
New entities. That sounds like a legislative fix rather than
no. I think, as I refer to, we can look across the state and see places where accessing a grant and loans has worked pretty well, and in climates that aren't as, say, politically forward-leaning as we are as a region. And they've had more success in making it rain for projects, for drinking water projects. And I think we can either learn or try to import those entities into our region, invite those entities into our region that aren't counties.
So the specific problem is sponsoring entities for funded construction projects that require that entity have both the ability to do the administrative overhead and, in some cases, the cash flow to handle the sometimes slow state reimbursement process.
Or to find somebody who can do that, you know,
right.
That is demonstrated effective at being able to find or cajole some other entity to do that. Yeah.
Okay. I'm
you follow me?
No.
So, you know, you look in Tulare, you look in Innu County, they've actually had more success at getting drinking water projects implemented than we have here in say, Monterey or Santa Cruz. And we're having conversations with some of those folks that have had success to try to understand why they're more successful than we are in a maybe less politically forward-leaning area. You know, what's working for them? What can we import idea-wise and corporation-wise, you know?
Can I suggest some staff direction here? The staff direction I would like to suggest, because I still don't completely understand what you're saying, Mr. Robertson, but what I'm divining from it is that you're working on it and trying to figure it out and aren't necessarily interested in getting a lot more specific at the moment. So what I'd like to suggest is staff direction that on these two specific issues of interacting with the state board funding folks on getting the rules changed to allow for in specific disadvantaged community situations coverage of payment for laterals, and second, approaches either what was suggested by the presenters of convening with folks that, as you indicated, sometimes God herself could ask them and we wouldn't necessarily get a better answer, can either approaches involving convening or other approaches to dealing with the sponsorship problem, and then circle back around and report to us on these things? Is that staff direction that seems appropriate to you and to the board?
Yeah,
yes.
I'm asking here for a consensus. From my perspective, this is exactly in line with what my thoughts are, and what I'm asking is for a nod of a head from the rest of our board member if we all support that. So, thank you for articulating that, Mike. The other action step that I'd like to see is, so it stays well within the radar, is on a weekly EO chair's report, get a little updates on how we're doing with Horacio's project. Because that, I think this is symptomatic of a whole issue.
Right.
I think we need to bring that to a win.
So thanks
in advance.
Yes.
And forgive me if every week I'll say, John, where are we?
Problem. My hesitancy in just coming clean, which I would much rather do, is that we have some conversations in motion right now. And I think it's premature to just lay out chapter and verse here. We have to do a little more legwork before we're prepared to reveal.
I respect that.
And Bruce?
Yeah, when we leave here today, I just want to know if there is any urgency related to imminent county decisions to privatize. Is there any hard deadline or chance that there'll be a significant development while we're cooking?
The deadline's actually passed. They were supposed to go to sale. I think what bid time was like last February. I think we have put into the written record that we would object to that until we had resolved these issues about the TMF and this issue of affordability. So it's my understanding that Monterey County can't complete the sale until we've closed this issue about TMF. And it's my understanding that they've made a determination, but it sounds like from Horacio you're still going back and forth with some information to document and probably specifically the financial capacity at this point. So I can John and I can confirm with the Division of Financial Assistance to make sure that there's nothing pending. I can also go back to Monterey County Public Works to confirm that there's no sale pending. But I do believe we're in the holding pattern until the TMF analysis is complete.
And we've been really, really clear with both Public Works and Financial Assistance about our expectations that we exhaust everything, that a sale should not sneak up on us here, that we expect to exhaust every effort to allow the community to own its own system.
Almost sounds like you need weekly calls with Public Works or a county. But my next three questions are similar to one another. Are our state board members completely updated on this? I mean, we're getting an update today, and we're consensusing that this is serious, and we want to.
Yeah, I think that if we talk to Felicia and some of the board participants, say that project you went to, the for sale sign is almost being hung on the water tank.
Right. So my question is, are they completely updated, or would updates refresh them?
I think an update would be probably useful.
Yep.
I think they were current at the time, but I'm sure that it's been displaced by things like water fix and
after
other.
Every day there's a fire.
Right.
So my next question similarly is, are the county board of supervisors updated? The supervisors of the public works decision makers in the county.
I don't think so, because every time we talk to the representative of Public Works, they just keep giving us that they're not ready, and they have to do other things to the water system. Like in February, a tree fall on the control system, and they haven't repaired it. All the wiring is just the way it was damaged is still there. They haven't connect two other connections that where they bought the property and they drilled the well. They haven't connect that guy. They also had an agreement with another community for reserve, to have another well for reserve, and we don't know yet if they're going to connect those connections to the other community. So I don't think the supervisor know this, and what I'm scared is that I think Simon Salinas, our supervisor, is going to be going out. So I think I should visit him.
Right. So that's kind of why I'm asking this, because when a supervisor is going out, the incoming candidates, it's a good time for them to get on top of it and become your best advocate, right? Because they want the power of the people behind them, especially when they're seeking new office. So I'm envisioning, based on what you just said, a letter from the state board with each paragraph has a slightly different heading, and the first paragraph is updating them on the seriousness of this, and then the latter two or three or four paragraphs are specific items of technical repair or maintenance that are needed, but that's up to staff to decide if that's appropriate. But the main point of my question is that if we don't have some strategy, we should have some strategy the next month or so to bring the Board of Supervisors, to let them know what we know, and they would probably have the same urgency that we're sensing here today. And my last question is, have we updated the local representatives, Mark Stone and Bill Monning? Have we done that on this issue?
Nope.
No.
So they're the kind of representatives that would like to be.
Staff cannot do that.
Okay, good. Then that's something that we can do, right? So what steps do we put together as a board so that the board can let those two individuals know where we are with this?
You know, as I reflect on this, I mean, there's a lot of suggestions that everybody's collectively making here. I see John taking a lot of notes, and maybe with, you know, in the next, unless you tell me that the for sale sign is already there, is next week or the week after this meeting, you know, that's something we come up with a expeditious, quick plan of action. You know, like one of the other thing I was thinking about, although I know she's got a lot on her plate, is with our new executive director, you know, with Eileen, and say, hey, you know, we need your help here. And your board was there, totally on board, and, you know, can you make a call downstairs? And I forgot which floor, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, we might, going back to statement one of Mr. Delgado's 3 points, we might play through one of the board members state board members who was on the tour, because real time they were engaging with their staff while we were on the tour.
Wrong, but I think this could yield quicker results than going through all the political
legislators
side, because it trickled back down here. We talked to the people who were there, and we can refresh their memory and perhaps get a little more results. And I know Felicia is very much engaged. Steve is vice chair now. I mean, he's very, very much engaged, too.
Tam was very engaged on this issue, too, from the tour.
Well, it doesn't hurt to start now to start making our representatives aware without asking them for any action. So if action is needed and if this gets more desperate, it's not all at once.
That's a good point.
They'd love to meet when there's no ask.
I've got good suggestions. I've got notes. I've got an idea associated with your third point, too, that maybe there's a couple things that we might take as an update. You know, we had another item here just a little bit ago, the stewardship group, that might be actually a really nice update item, too. It's not an ask. It's just a story, a good story.
If you're going to do an update, I would think it would be to Senator Monning and Assemblymember Caballero, since they're the two that represent San Gerardo.
Okay, so, Rocio, thank you very much. Appreciate you help daylight again this important item that I thought it was very pertinent to, you know, the topic we had today. So thank you again for your efforts.
Thank you.
We're
thank
here
you.
To support you. I thank think you, you see thank every one of us, we're like, no, we want to help. And thank you again for your perseverance. All right?
Thank you, everyone, and Angela, Matt, and everyone. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again. I'd like to conclude this item, and your choice, Mr. Robertson. We continue to the next item, or we take a quick break, 15 minutes. All right. So that was a little snapping hand you were showing me. So we're going to reconvene in 15 minutes. Okay. Thank you very much.